thought and reference snap into place more quickly than quickly. And we ignore the ground of the texture and the ground of experience itself, and we adhere to the textural universe that thought creates faster than it appears we have a choice. When, someone emphasizes having choice as a human, meaning to avoid afflictive stories and aim toward Pollyanna contrivances, that's the wrong place to exercise choice. You're too late. It won't work. If there's choice, and choice might not be the right word, you could say it's a nuance of discernment. Not choice. Tuning is different than choosing. So in present experience, it's possible to see that mind, conjecture, and adhesion to that as reality is simply a habit of tuning. It's not like you make a choice to inhabit yourself as a thinking creature. You don't make a choice to do that. Thought is present.
70 miles an hour zipping around your brain, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, whatever it's actually
right.
doing.
And you can't say that thought is what? Not here a moment ago, but here now, right? Thought or its potential is present. But it's present alongside its own absence. It's not one or the other. It's not like you're either immersed in thinking as a way to engage your experience or not thinking as a way to engage your experience. Thought is always present as, right, an expression of radiant beatitude. And not thought, curiously, is also simultaneously present as an expression of radiant beatitude. Now, it's not like you're sitting somewhere with a remote going, I'm going to go for the thoughtless part because that rocks. And the thought part, well, that's me. That sucks. So you're not sitting there like on a couch with an AB remote. Well, so what's your identity? If you have one, your identity is the entirety of the radiant background in which thought and not thought can be, you could say, discerned or perceived as elements.
Simply understanding there's a background is probably going to put you there.
Yes. And that's interesting to see how language can evoke an exploration. Language can evoke a journey. It can evoke a feeling tone. Not a destination necessarily, but a possibility. Right? Language is evocative. That's what we're doing. I mean, we're, right, when we're with each other or even with ourselves, we're in a field of evocation. Right? It's not like you become comatose when you're making eggs or you move the bird and paint the ceilings. You're nonstop in a bliss field of pure evocation. So thought is, right, a profound demonstration of evocation. Sentiment, mood, sensation is all, right, present as elements of the entirety of the field of evocation. Now, once we presume that thinking is actually creating a distributable, verifiable, sign-onable reality, then we're living in fantasy. And when we seek to touch or interface or feel the nature of present experience, and we do so through the habit of thinking, through the habit of association, of hypotheticalism, of anecdotal reporting, we remain gleefully or discouragingly in this total fantasy. Like everything you think and everything you feel, everything you see, taste, touch, smell, da-da-da-da, is just, it's just a field of evocation. And it's highly pixelated and profound and radiant and strange and always on cue. This is never late. This is never not what it is. But thinking and adhesion to thinking makes it appear as if you're a discreetly appearing entity. And so then the identity is with the packet, the apparitional nature of the packet, not with the choiceless background. So the identity, this identity is particularized as an object or a subject, doesn't really matter, right? But there's the particularization of the entirety of experiencing turns into the sense of an individual in an individuated sheath of, right, individuated preferences and gifts, assurances and demands, interfacing as, right, a disparate creature in an otherwise unbreakable and unbroken field of pure evocation.
So, when you say adherence to the thought, what's coming to my mind is, in fact, it's not even possible to adhere to the thought. So, the thought that you're adhering to the thought is creating the falsehood. Like, it's taking the appearance. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
The thought appears. So it's taking the appearance as something.
Yes, that's right. Objectifying okay. An otherwise vague radiant field.
Sound of sunshine coming down.
Yeah. And then the, you could say the organic, call it creation, which is vague, of oneself as the experiencer of the experience. So there's things outside you, like everybody else, and all objects, even your clothes are outside you. If your birthday suit is the perimeter of you, right? And so we wander through a field of absolute unicity as a creature.
It's funny. Because it's like, you know, all the little bacteria and whatnot are just sloughing off as you go along, but you're not, you know, can't see it. It doesn't, it's like so arbitrary.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, do you have a relationship with your spleen the same way you have with your elbow or your nose or your teeth? I mean, how do you relate to you, you know, as a physicality, as a bioluminosity? Right?
Not in parts.
Right.
General.
Yeah.
Well, we're not aware. Like, it's funny to think that if a parasite takes over any of my internal organs, most of the time I'm not very much aware. And so maybe it gets so big I start having some serious symptoms. But
right.
So, like, we don't think that a parasite in the same way can take over our brain, and we could have no idea, you know.
Yep.
Nobody's there to really judge or, like, inform, you know, in some way.
Yeah.
So.
Probably.
That's what I mean. That's what, kind of what I'm hinting at, you know? We don't think about it the same way or something.
If we're actually kind of the matrix, I hate to use that word, but all this is occurring in, then are we just kind of stuck mesmerized by it? You know, it's like we're staring at it intensely.
One might say this is self-mesmerizing. It's fascinated by itself. like an infant with its toes. It's like, you got to be kidding me. What are those?
Yeah. Yeah.
These are incredible. Like, I can see them, touch them, and feel them at the same time.
And taste them.
And taste them. I mean,
smell them.
You know, toes are the shit. And so this is like that. This is self-mesmerized by its own evocation. And the grandeur of objects or subjects appearing in itself. The fascination is a love affair that unrivaled. Your present experience is an unrivaled love affair with yourself.
But we're trying to move on from our toes.
Maybe we should go back. Yeah, maybe we should just go back to the toes. We'll have a toe workshop. Some crawling, some toes, you know. Baby food at lunch break.
Yes, we'll go, just go backwards.
Yeah.
Step by step.
Right. Yeah. Benjamin Button.
That's right.
Yeah. So the nuance there for is to open the doorway, window, whatever, you know, portal comes to mind. Could be a lobster or chocolate and vanilla ice cream, right? So here you are, here this is. We already are pretty well steeped in what thought and association and creaturehood and projection and time deliver. Right? Not a lot of secrets left when it comes to, you know, you as an egomaniac. Got that?
Yeah.
I mean, I continue to surprise myself, but, you know, yeah, me as an egomaniac is, it rolls out of bed pretty much the same. What we don't spend nearly enough time exploring is this same present moment as both portal and destination, as evocation and response, as the entirety of the impersonal miracle of experiencing itself. And the curious certainty that it's so.
Entirety is very interesting to play with, or I don't know, just when that pops in, it's like very interesting. Like really having nowhere to go.
It's really challenging and fun to challenge your the reflex of superstition. Challenge the reflex of creaturehood. Challenge the reflex that there's a creator other than you that is responsible for you, or that might or will punish you, or might or will gift you. What if there is no authority, no creator outside this, meaning not outside you, that your present experience and attention, full with whatever they're full of, is the signature, the sigil of the evocative creative impulse, and that nothing came before this moment? This is not the consequence of some genesis. This is it.
It's really, it is very interesting. It does seem challenging, although it's not, to get out of that X plus Y equals Z thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if I go really far outside the boundary sometimes, I'm still in fucking X plus Y equals Z, and I don't even realize it, you know? It's like, because it's still like a creature, there's still like kind of subtle something to do, and
the power of forgetfulness is kick-ass.
Yeah. Well, the minute something physically goes wrong with me, I'm just going to cause an effect mode like crazy.
Sure.
Why did it happen? How do I get rid of it? Why do I happen? How do I get rid of it?
Yeah. Of course. Right. You know, illness and healing from illness occur. Illness and terminal locus occurs. You know, what are the principles of the herbal, homeopathic, cosmic, or allopathic intervention that remedies the so-called illness? I mean, everything is of the same magical field.
Well, you don't want that suit screwed.
Yes, I do.
I'll get you another one, please.
That,
there's
beautiful.
That.
Yeah, it's always, always weirder than whatever it is I think. That's all I know. That's a good reminder. Just a constant. It's definitely weirder than whatever it is that you think is going on. Definitely.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
I don't think it's. If you remain in what is appearing, the questions don't even come up.
That's right. Yes.
So the questions are not necessary at all.
Well,
and in fact, can become
weirder than that.
Can become the thought that you adhere to. So.
Yes. Of course. Well, you use questions or various portals to openness as the yoga itself. You tickle or scratch at the window of openness. And as openness comes to visit and more confidence is created, then you don't need the same, you know, vehicles. But we use whatever vehicles, you know, we have to return us to availability, because discursive hallucination is not availability, right? Discursive hallucination is insistence. Thank you. Isn't insistence? It's I know what this is.
Well, obviously they don't know, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
But that refers to another. So then it becomes difficult. Yeah. That's referring to the experience of another.
Sure. Yes.
You know? But I get what you're saying, I think. Big spoon. Look at the size of it.
Whoa.
I'd rather use this one.
Yeah, I think I will. What's that, French toast?
Anyone like more decaf or regular coffee?
Decaf here.
Decaf too, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
It's Daffy.
Daffy Duckish.
Were they supposed to be dry? Or do you want it? Yeah. I'll bring you. Okay, I'm sorry about that.
Dave just did that so he could get free toast.
Maybe she put butter on those.
More recently, though, not asking too many questions as like I used to.
Yeah.
Somehow recognizing it. I like vanilla ice cream. I don't need to know why I like it. So it's interesting because I enjoy pondering. My meditation went from the sound of the heating system to the colonial house I grew up in, room by room. It's like, how the hell did I end up in the colonial house I grew up in? It all went to the steam heat, and then the heat in the room to the steam heat in the house. To the rooms, traveling the rooms of the old house. None by which a question was tickling anything. I just find it real curious. Even now, my mind just blanked out. I'm cool with a blank.
Being cool with the blank is a gift of grace. Being cool with the blank is a symptom of a mind addicted to duality, reference, placing itself as the arbiter of experience, to a mind that is become more comfortable and relaxed with the instantaneous nature of non-dual confidence. This is, you feel that this is, and we're not still under the influence of reporting on what it is, either to oneself or anybody else. We're released from the impulses of hypotheticalism and anecdotal fantasy. We actually find delight, nourishment in ourselves as the background, with no force or focus of object or subject. That's what if we want to call this a yoga, that's what it delivers. That's the that's what you pay the big money for.
Absence of mind.
And vacuity is not just a dumb stare of confusion. Vacuity is dynamically intelligent, creative and responsive, truly compassionate. Vacuity by its nature has the signature of compassion, right? With passion, to be with. But that's not something that needs to be demonstrated behaviorally.
And the vacuity?
Uh-huh.
What if you can't help it?
That's right.
I swear I have Alzheimer's.
You're so lucky.
I'm like, it's only related to speaking. Like, I can't have trouble getting speaking, I think. But anyway.
Look at the texture of hunger, smell, taste, touch, chewing, flavor. It's an absolute perfume.
Yeah, the whole process.
It's crazy. It's a bliss field of, you know, bringing, let's call it, hopefully visually enticing, nourishing morsels into yourself. Your cells are like,
you could call it a primary act of self-creation.
When is there not a primary act?
Yeah. But really, physically, we're made out of food.
Your Saga Dada would make that reference frequently when talking about the genesis of consciousness. He said, consciousness, it's a food body.
Yeah.
And what's a food body? Sunlight? What's sunlight? I don't know. Do you want to go the hydrogen route?
Is there a good scientific explanation for light? I don't think there is.
No.
There's not a good scientific explanation for anything.
If I may. Tell you what's popping into my head.
Yeah, there is something like gravity. Well, no, not the act of a being there, but...
No, there's not.
It's not. No, grab. They have no idea.
No idea.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the way things interact with each other, like, laws describing how they're going to. I think that's like a good explanation for... Not the why of it or how.
Well, even that, doesn't it drop out when there's no observer, and so, like,
no matter,
really...
No matter what model you might
it's an
have...
Opinion, though. I mean, to be, like, there's a good explanation for no matter what model.
No matter what model you have, though you might be able to draw lowest common denominator particles of manifest creation, no one has an explanation for sentient consciousness.
Oh, yeah.
And even as you go deeper into the modeling of parts and subparts and sub-subparts of stuff... Mm-hmm. You end up back at the consciousness problem. Because there are no atoms. There are no electrons or protons. This is chaos. It's a chaos field. The description of a proton is an atemporal chaos field. Outside of time, outside of space, chaos field.
Yeah.
That's not really made of anything.
Wave, particle, lots of space. Doesn't make any sense.
And even wave particle haven't completed the circuit.
No.
And yet, you can build a super collider,
yeah.
Right? Or improve the accuracy of healing people from, let's say, cancer with targeted radiation. So science is, you know, good for something. I mean, when Neil Armstrong, you know, stepped off the ladder into a pile of moondog shit, right? It's like, one small step for man, one large step for mankind. Whoa. What was that? 1960 what? 1969, right? You remember where you were?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. The vacuum.
You were in the vacuum, yeah. You were a vacuum.
No. Sadly, I wasn't.
I was in the great vacuum. I understand.
Yeah, I was on the moon. They came to visit me.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you assholes. How'd you get here?
The quantum...
Yeah.
...physics. I'm just going to say what's in my head. They describe it as a field of possibilities.
Right.
So when they're doing the double slit.
Yeah.
And the observer comes in.
Right. Schrodinger,
It affects the outcome. The same way that if, let's call ourselves a particle, observes a thought, bam, it becomes a single particle. As opposed to...
I don't think it has to, though, because you can have, like, subconscious thoughts that you don't even know are there that are still affecting you, like, on an emotional level that conscious thoughts are.
Probably 90% of what
Well, we actually are the wave, but it's the fact that time...
I had him just open fire grill that for you, so I'll remember that for next time.
Everyone else is good?
Oh, perfect. Good.
It's like, for me... adding time into the mix, and time is not an actual thing, but once you pinpoint an exact spot in the infinitude, you bring it all down to a particular, which is, because the wave is actually the result of all of the electrons, it's not the result of an electron. In the same way.
I thought that was the whole thing. It was one electron could be wave or particle.
I think it's time that is causing. It's time in the observer.
No. You just said like all the electrons. That's what I'm saying. Isn't it just one electron can be wave or particle?
No. Because they claim that when a single particle is sent and they observe it, they find one particle. The problem is that it's the observer who's bringing time
into
the picture.
It's a measuring device.
You're not.
No, they don't
necessarily. Okay, an observer. How do you take a measuring device and convert it into a human being that's an observer?
Because they're claiming when they observe it, they're
it's kind of funny, right?
Inputting a time structure.
I mean, the act of measuring.
By the effect of observing.
Like, what does that mean?
I'm familiar with the experiment.
Okay. Because, in fact. I think, in fact, they are waves.
The
particles.
What's the wave can be? You think that there is some
objective?
Well,
I'm disputing that.
You think that there is some like objective form that it takes?
Definitely.
I mean,
particles. If you put a number of particles together, they will become a wave.
The whole thing is that the wave, that the particles
just
can be
like
a wave.
Just like water in the ocean.
I think that's like...
Take a drop of
interpretation. You can interpret it a million different ways.
The hallucination is that there is a genesis underlying the breadth of experiencing that can be reduced to something like particle and wave. That's not the case.
I think what I'm getting at is the all and the nothing, because this is particle and wave, I think.
What if it's just trying to show you how weird it is, not actually give you an actual answer to anything? It's just like, look how fucking weird I am. It's showing up, and we're like, particle, wave.
I agree.
Now there's an observer, and it's like, no.
Well, that was what got me into the whole thing.
I was just trying to show you how fucking weird I am.
It's the observer that changes the... that dynamic of reality on the small scale.
But that
particle.
Still is making that's it into something.
Yeah, but there's no observer.
Well, that you and I would say that, but I'm talking about
but we're alone and we're going to be arrested.
But this is the problem. This is the problem that I think that this
we're
is going
to
happen.
The Inquisition on the inquiry.
Because we're saying there's a particle, but there's not. It's a wave.
It's neither.
Okay. I'll stop. Because the physicists think they're observing a single
particle. You just lied.
Maybe.
No, I mean, you said you're going to stop.
Oh.
I'll stop. No, I wasn't really serious about that.
What I'm trying to say is
yes.
The observer.
I'm really not going to stop.
I'm really not going to stop.
No.
86 on the I'm going
to
stop.
That it's not actually the coffee.
Let me put my summary in.
Yeah. Submit your paper.
Your thesis, please.
It's the function of what could be considered an object, the observer. That's giving the the entire wrong interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
That was my point. Okay, done.
Mm-hmm.
Try.
I thought Peter had a good thing that relates to it. He said, we put so much importance on our thought. Just because you choose one thought doesn't mean that a billion other thoughts aren't still out there, and you could have chosen any one of them. The one you chose has no particular importance whatsoever. The others are all still there.
Quite true. Like when he was talking earlier about like choice, like that's where it stopped for me. Even it was like, oh yeah, I chose this, but it's like, where did that impulse come from? And now I had some experiences thrust upon me that, you know, ultimately perhaps led me to you know, choose that, or maybe not even. But like, how can I lay claim to any of the actions I have supposedly taken, or any thoughts I think are mine? Like, oh, you have some thoughts that's like crazy. Like, oh, you know, what if I just flip the table over? You know, because your mind has like wild thoughts like that, and you're like, oh, that's not me. But I'm like, oh, I want to order tea. Like, yeah, like that's me. That's my thought. It's like, I don't know. How can I have any legitimate claim to any thing I've done or thoughts? Madness.
Can't.
This is so not because of anything you or I or anyone's thinking. This is so completely independent of your preference or choice. Though the power of discernment, thinking, representation, scanning, selecting, can clearly easily appear as I chose. But when we look a little more carefully at it, feel the vibratory signatures of this suchness, and then the miracle of discernment, observation, naming, conforming, creating, manipulating, comparing, measuring, selecting, and then an action occurs which suggests I chose. And if you look at it that way, it's like, you gotta be kidding.
Yeah, you've like no control over any of the causes, but I'm like,
not
the
a one.
Is suddenly mine. It's like,
and all of, yeah, then the outcome, if there is an outcome, right, is mine.
You know, it's
like it or not.
I'm thinking of this ridiculous thing I read that was about the placebo effect, and they're like, it's not at, they don't know, you know, this is makeup, of course, but they're saying now it's an actual effect potentially, and it's not, it is in the mind in a sense, it's like neurochemical, whatever, but they've actually kind of figured out like genotypes or phenotypes that are more prone to the placebo effect. So in a sense, what they're saying is it actually might be chemical. So chemical, mind, but it's not, you know, it's not as like, oh, it's just the observer because you think you're being healed. They're like, actually, there might be a little more concrete, you know. Like, if you have a certain, you're wired a certain way, have a certain chemical composition. I mean, it's just funny, you know, it's a...
The entirety of one's subjective and objective experience, which you can't actually split, is the placebo effect. How you frame your existence in some kind of volume is the placebo effect. It's all you've got. Is placebo effect.
That's true.
You don't have a durable, demonstrative, reliable, count-onable reality that you can either contend with, agree with, disagree with, manipulate, accelerate. No such thing. When Nirsagadatta would emphasize, what were we talking about that he would emphasize? Oh, food body.
Oh, yeah.
When he would emphasize consciousness as a, you could say, a gift of food body, he was referring not just to physical food, but right to all of the vibratory elements that construe physical food, that build the cellular structure, right, of what we call body. So it's an entirety of a vibratory field, which of course has to include the plant matter and the animal life and the water and the nitrogen fixing bacteria and the chlorophyll and the photosynthesis
billions
and you're like
and trillions of brain neurological pathways that are bigger than the Milky Way.
Yeah. Yeah, so you've got something bigger than the Milky Way in your head in terms of its imaginative prowess.
It would take us 3 million years to map it.
Okay.
I mean, that's, you know... That's
if that's not a placebo...
Joke,
the entirety of you is a placebo.
Yeah.
As a creature, as a mind, as consciousness itself, as experiencing, as discernment, as consequence, as like, as dislike...
And it's like obvious the more we this explores itself, it just keeps making up new. It's like carving out new pathways, making shit up as it goes. It's like
there's no end to its, let's call it, its both its physical or its cosmic neuronal capacity.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible.
More another.
So no matter how you look, where you look, the nuance, the subtlety, the enjoyment of it, the frustration, the challenge, the fear that arises, all of this is an unending cornucopia of more placebo demonstration. That's not limited to what we call, you know, humanesqueness.
Great word.
You're not limited to what can be felt, thought, imagined from the vantage point of oneself as human. Your imagination, attention, and experience being of the same nature, uncaused, has no limitation. And it's not like you then have to go visit other planets to test the theory. Because no matter what planet you visit, or the means that you use to get to the planet, and maybe return or not, is going to be more placebo. Right? I mean, let's say humans want to, you know, explore. So we might explore a little bit of the oceans, right? Antique shops. We might reach for local planets, probes to the sun, extra solar probes. Imagine incredible wormholes on big screens. And the next thing that you imagine here at this table, the next thing that you imagine came from where? By virtue of your choice? Your selection? But you see that imagining itself is force of nature, force of expression. There's no I'm imagining. It's just, holy fuck, Batman. It's just pure evocation. Evocation as a placebo field.
It just abuses that our reference library can access.
But doesn't it?
A person that seems to have started here, remembered stuff, and
you can,
right here at this table.
You can do a mean hard drive seek, right?
Yeah, like ending up in the house of my childhood.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, while we were living in the household of our childhood, we were dwelling as pure light in an imaginary field.
Yeah, of course.
And so, why not enjoy a house tour while sitting on the meditation cushion?
What was fascinating was it was absent of nostalgia. It was actually a physical
of course.
Feeling.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, I was like, wow, this is freaking wild.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really, really interesting.
I'm sorry I didn't see you come in. Okay.
So, yeah.
You okay with
that? Yeah. Ryan?
And I see the trap in over-identification.
Dave.
Coffee.
I
know his
Dave.
Name is, but I think
what?
His is too.
Dave.
Oh, is it Dave?
Dave. We got three Daves.
Dave, can I also
Dave,
get
Dave.
A cup of coffee?
Sure.
Dave. Exactly. That's how I remember his name.
Well, yeah.
I think of you.
I didn't know the world was ready for more than one of us.
No, please. There could never be another.
Very commonly, we belittle ourselves according to the efficiency, efficacy, or the accomplishments of a day?
Yes.
We belittle ourselves based on what we did or didn't do, what we did or didn't feel,
puff ourselves up.
What we did or didn't say. Right? Now, it's not that difficult to see that this inner belittlement or puffery is appearing virtually. It has nothing to do with reality. It's just pure imagination. And it's evocative imagination because it can be accompanied by physicality, by somatic, emotional, psychiatric symptom. So the somaticization of imagination makes it to us look like, fuck, that's real. That happened. Or that it's happening now. Because I have thinking, reference, emotion, physicality. I got the whole ball of wax going on here. So this has got to be true. What I'm saying about this and about myself and about what happened has to be true.
Because there's like an imaginary like 10 variables that we think we've got down.
Or even if it's like, oh,
which is like
true, but if I care,
it feels
true or not.
Feels good. Yeah.
Well, even if it's not true and you know that, it's not like you can...
Well,
I can't make it go away. Like,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, oh, this is wrong, but like it's still there, feeling bad.
You waste your time.
Yeah.
Going down the road, like, feeling bad.
Oh, being a maniac, but...
Thank you.
For you.
Okay,
that's
sure.
All I can do.
It's the best I can do.
I can't prevent it.
No.
Okay.
But... when we navigate or negotiate with feeling states, usually we add suffering onto suffering by thinking, feeling, insisting that we shouldn't be feeling and insisting and thinking the way that we're feeling, insisting, and thinking.
We layer it up.
And it loops how quick?
One more part. I don't know. We're good.
Yeah.
Can't control that one either. You're
yeah.
Just getting screwed constantly.
Now, so when you listen to a crackpot like Peter Brown, that is takes the risk to say, just go over there. In other words, everyone wants to resolve their personal portfolio of angst through yoga,
crisis.
Through meditation, through Course in Miracles, through science of mind and Scientology and Rosicrucianism, or things as silly as Judaism, Christianity, Islam.
Through crisis. Which is what keeps us from... It's severe intimacy disorder.
And someone... Well, there's that. And someone says, hey, look over there! Which has the curious, you could say, potential of flatlining the inertia of your drama. But we are very, very tenacious in saying, no, 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 no. I don't want that. I want to resolve the crisis of myself. Which is just another way of saying, I don't want that. I would prefer to remain in the imaginary durability of the crisis of myself.
It is pretty powerful, though, if that drops in for a minute. You're like, all someone had to do was say squirrel, and my whole life is like gone. It's pretty fucked.
Squirrel.
It's like, that's pretty powerful. You're like, well, all right.
We're rattled.
It's not a choice, though.
Choice can work for you or against you. Not choice can work for you or against you. Choice is not really important.
I guess you could have, like, one that's carried up in the, you know, whatever, brouhaha going on for themselves.
Right, Mr. and Mrs. Brouhaha.
And you're like, well, Peter Brown's if I should go look at that, the sky or something. Put my focus there. So you'd be like, well, I can't do that or something like that. You know, then you're like, well, I'm such a terrible person because I know what to do and I'm not doing it anyway or something like that. You know, like...
Yes.
Like, it's either, that's just the commentary that comes with whatever.
It takes, yes, of course it will, because yeah. The person is so convincing that any alternative to the person is going to be filtered through the likes or dislikes of the person.
Yeah.
This is a radical departure from the brouhaha of person.
Yeah.
It's not look over there to ameliorate or mitigate discomfort.
There's nothing for or against in the first place, I think, is the heart of the problem. To having a choice work for you or against you is actually, it's not...
Maintains the hallucination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, don't... You know? Having the agenda to have the thing work for you is in itself no good.
Well, suffering persists. Okay.
Appearances persist.
Yes. And we're not looking for 86 on experience or experiences. We're just playing with the possibility of engaging or being in relationship with your present experience. With, let's say, just different tools of discernment, different tools of appreciation. Withdrawing from the predominant conformist human hallucination of what reality is, withdrawing from that, and taking the risk to feel yourself completely brand new and unconditioned, which is not resolving my brouhaha. It's not resolving my crisis. It's not correcting all of the numerous defilements, afflictions, and disappointments of my behavioral system.
Yeah, it's almost as if you're reorienting the access. Like the hard drive, it ruminates, it goes back to, it tries to improve and, you know, modify and enhance and, you know, whatever. And then that still happens. Yet somehow... the impulse to do that shifts or changes somehow of its own.
Absolutely.
And that, and now the review or the reference is somehow doesn't reify the nonsense.
Yes.
And what it does do is
doesn't
somewhat
reiterate
it. It's somewhat mysterious though, what it does do. When it's free of the I've been down this track and it sucks, right? Or I've been down this track and damn, is it good? I want more of it. I mean, it's the same sort of dynamic of I, Dave, like this and I, Dave, hate this, whatever. Or I, Dave, have to nostalgia.
Yes.
You know, and reflection.
Nostalgia can occur and does occur, but it doesn't have to insist that there's continuity of self.
So maybe that's what shifts. It's not building the self up, trying to resolve the self. It's saying, oh, yeah, hey, how you doing? Here you are.
Nostalgia seems so personalized.
Well, yeah, that's why it seems to be a reference point that's really moved into this investment in self. That nostalgia takes me back to the time when I went through something. Ooh, you know? Or... this really cool period of, you know, experiencing. It's like,
yes.
What's happening right now? You know? What feelings are reinforcing what? You know, it's like watching the movie and saying, there's my life. And then it's just a screen with a bunch of, you know, globs moving around.
Here we are.
Yeah.
The blah.
No, it's kind of... kind of fun. Again, that embracing my shit.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun.
Nice.
Because I can be a real shit. You
know? We all knew that. We were waiting for you to catch up.
You know what? I no longer have to fix it because
seriously?
Yeah. Yeah, really, because it's really not stuck to anything. When it was stuck to this investment with my identification, oh man, I got to do something about it because I might choose wrongly and reproduce it again and again. Da 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 da. To wait a minute. Oh my God, this thing is so much bigger than my little investment
so
property.
I'm just keep eating.
No. You're on a roll.
Why am I doing this?
So, I don't know. There's something that's different in the sense of a smile at the contradiction or the undesirables, or something that we thought is definitely just off the charts. It's not acceptable. It's just, yeah, we got to do something about this. The world's going to hell in a handbasket. If I don't personally do something about my thing, the world is definitely not going to get better. It's like, really? Where'd that come from?
So having these kinds of conversations is an opportunity to look, you could say, deeply and undefendedly at the geometry of consciousness itself.
Yeah, that's the zoom out.
And in so doing, submit yourself to becoming irradiated by what this actually is. Consciously so. It's not like just reading a good novel and, you know, having a, wow, you really invited to inhabit and occupy the profundity of your own attention, your own experience. Completely unafflicted by what imagination is capable of.
It's capable, man.
It's capable.
It could take you on a really good journey just in a car ride to breakfast. It's like, holy shit, I just watched a horror flick in my mind. Or whatever, you know.
It could rob you of a lifetime of intimacy because of
also,
personal chaos.
It could also just be enjoyable in a weird sense, you know. Like, it's like, wow, that thing is insane. And it just took me on this crazy thing for 20 minutes and that was cool, you know. Like,
mm-hmm.
Want some more coffee? Not I.
I'll have some decaf. Half a cup would be just fine for me. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Two cream?
No.
Left.
Matt? There's cream here.
Sweet.
Can we
thank
take
you.
The
flour?
Sure, thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Everything that appears in mind and impulse and story told in an aha moment, in a question, in a description, in a discovery, okay, when we suggest that this is unafflictable and unafflicted, that means everything.
Yeah.
Not just the bane of my suffering. It also means, you know, the bliss of your discovery. So what? How free do you want to be? Do you actually want to be someone who durably experiences bliss as contrasted with someone who durably experiences self-effacement? No, you don't give a shit about this, right? To have a preference in terms of how you occupy this placebo, you're doomed. It's just going to say, "Oh, do you have any interest at all? Any? I mean, even the slightest wish? Do you? Do you have the slightest wish?" And you'll go, "Well, I can think of something." Boom! You're dead. Snake. What? Oh. It's that quick. Yeah. They're actually the same. The snake bite is the same as the effulgent arrival of a wish that pleases you. Oh! I'm a person. This is a world. Let's get that Maserati. even just a model one. So to have an interest in either what's appearing or that there, it should be ameliorated, medicated, improved upon, should go away, should amplify, should last. Oh!
That's what makes this so radical.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, if you are actually God, and what that implies, namely the non-plussed, non-author of all and everything, then how could your so-called life or liberation be bookended by birth and death, by the duration of the physical? Is it possible to walk out on yourself so thoroughly that you don't give a fuck if suffering is appearing, and you're not interested that suffering should even be ameliorated or replaced by something that some yogi looks like, you know, is bliss on high? Here's all of this. What does it have to do with you?
It appears to be a shift of reference that you're describing. The reference being the I, it's always going to be qualified with something desirable. Or it's going to transcend that reference being invited or uninvited.
Oh, this is coming for you. You can only run away from a Tyrannosaurus Rex so long. I mean, it does 36 miles an hour trotting. Where are you going?
Well, you gotta stop moving so it can't see you.
Play dead.
Yeah. That is a tactic that creatures use.
I think that reference is a little too perfect, maybe. Did you plan that?
You're always plucking from, let's just call it, the collective unconscious. Serendipity is all this is, because it's not other than itself, and nothing that's appearing in it possesses individuated mind or individuated agenda. To get a sense of that, whether it's at the breakfast table or in nature or even in the midst of a, you know, self-denying bender, the miracle of unabated serendipity. You start to become fascinated with, sensitive to, admiring of, curious about the demonstration of unabated serendipity. Tell me about your suffering. Tell me all about it. Tell me about what you've got to fix. There's no such thing. And look at the genesis of the clinger, right? I mean, there are Klingons, right? In the early episodes, they were our mortal enemies. Later, we forged an alliance to combat the, not the Ferengis. Romulans.
Romulans.
The Romulans. So alliances can be made even amongst mortal enemies to fight something larger and more dangerous than themselves. So let's say you're free falling.
That was cheap, man.
That's a cheap shot.
The serendipity. Oh my god.
Yeah, okay.
Unbelievable. I hate this.
You're the only one.
I know I am. It's lonely.
Yeah, it's lonely there. It really is. Come with us. Enjoy the song.
No.
It won't hurt. It's a slight pinch, but after that, everything smooths out.
What did you say, Kevin?
He hates the song. I hate the song. And I'm the only one in the world.
Probably not. Keep thinking that.
Is there a online community of people that hate this song?
I could start one.
Probably.
You could start one.
You could probably find one, I'm sure.
Yeah. They could go to the supermarket and they check you out really, really slowly, you know, and there's road rage, people box you in so you can't get where you want to go. They know. They can feel it.
She doesn't like free falling.
Yeah, there she is. She doesn't like free falling, no. You know, there's a nice oak tree out there just looking for you.
I have a lot of oak trees in my house. That was horrible, sorry.
So you invite us to come over and hang out?
I'm a sick fucker.
The
it's
habit
fun
of...
to just be like, I'm a sick fucker. That's cool.
You are a sick fucker.
Shit that goes in my head, I'm
we
like,
will
whoa.
Get you, we will get you a
like,
certificate.
Maybe someday I'll just write a horror novel and I just don't, you know what's
that going would
like.
Just be an autobiography.
Exactly. And everyone will, lots of people will enjoy it.
The idea of serendipity.
Yeah.
And like the singularity of reality. Like it seems to me that if one was open to experiencing the unicity that actually is would fucking blow you from here to wherever.
The next town,
like
at a minimum.
I mean, it would hit so hard, right? It would destroy.
Here you are. That's this.
I still got some ego in there, so.
You have a very delightful ego. Why give it up?
But if.
Don't let it. Don't go down easily.
Yeah.
What's that great poem, right?
Write a novel.
Rage against the...
I think if you were able to actually...
Rage.
Like...
Yeah,
experience it, I think it would just totally obliterate any trace of an individual.
But here it is.
I know.
Yeah.
But...
When I come to it.
To be open to the... Because to be open to it is to be open to everything simultaneously.
Well, that's all there is simultaneously and everything.
I'm talking about experiencing the truth of that statement.
Well, I know. The funny thing is that even in the midst of our miserable egomania, that's the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the midst of partiality.
But the ego keeps that door right here so that it is not entirely open. Okay, because if it was entirely open,
don't rain
bam.
On her pity party.
Yeah, right. Yeah, really.
I'm
let her go.
Pity.
No, right. Yeah,
there's she's, no pity.
She's not aiming for pity. She's been down that road.
No,
she's done with that.
No, and I don't even really care if it happens or it doesn't happen. I'm just saying that I sense.
Right.
I sense that the vastness.
Yeah.
Is of such a nature
that
there will be nothing left.
That's right. Here you are.
Okay.
There is nothing left.
I will not claim there is. I will not.
What's the?
I will not shovel bullshit.
Yeah.
At the breakfast.
No. We'll get you a shovel and an extra size wheelbarrow.
I can't begin to know it.
You could dig the hole after we invite everyone over for the oak tree hanging out party.
Let's say we have an agreeable, congenial discourse on the nature of reality to the best of our ability, linguistically and otherwise, and people go, sounds pretty far out, dude. I'm picking up what you're putting down. So what is it? What is it that seems to persist, that continues to cajole you into, right, the experience of a creature? You've heard about this amazing reality that's, you know, maybe can be found in Shangri-La, but not in Doylestown. And we agree with, right, its explosive, flatlining, beyond capacity, but we find ourselves curiously still orienting to the magnificence of experiencing from the vantage point of...
It's not a choice.
Well, choice is not important. Again, choice isn't important. It's just, look at... Let's just say enjoy the...
geometry of that occurring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is unbelievable.
That's why I say I am attempting to make it what I would call an observation.
Uh-huh.
That I feel that that's...
Yeah. Now, since nothing is true at all, if you feel yourself inhabiting your present experience with some trueness associated with it, then this will reply to you. It's serendipitous. Mm. So if you think something's true, it's like, gotcha.
Yeah.
Let's true on, baby. Let's suffer this motherfucker. Because something is true.
Something is true to me is like you've taken a position.
Yes.
Of any kind.
Yes.
Even if it's as subtle as a wave and a particle.
Yep.
You can spin yourself into a really interesting...
That's why it spins. I mean, all observations of nearly everything, limited by nothing, spins. It's like you could say the spinning motion of a total incredulity makes it look like it is something. The fan effect, right?
Well, that's why science keeps appearing to be more true and discovering more and more people.
Yeah.
It's just science is real. It's just science is real. So it just becomes more and more real.
Yeah, but Goswami, Amit Goswami, right? He's a...
Yeah, that's Amit. He's a quantum activist. I just removed myself from the quantum activist website.
But
he's going. Website.
He's going the other way.
Yeah,
he's saying, "Look, we're sorry. We pulled the wool over everyone's eyes for all of these decades, thinking that we knew what this was or wasn't, and that we should develop experiments to prove or disprove it. We even raised countless billions upon billions of dollars to build colliders all over the place. Thank you to smash particles because we think we're onto something." And he said, maybe it was for New Age, you know, the notoriety
well,
or attraction.
Well, he's still on the Observer, you know, as, like, yeah, there's
but he
a
was
lot
saying
of,
it's all a ruse. The entirety of what we know as so-called modern-day physics and particles and Higgs bosons and all of this demonstrations, he said, we're sorry, we're just making it up. Nobody knows what this is. At the same time, whatever we refer to as science or a body of investigation in causality could appear to be making, I don't know, progress. Maybe they'll smash the wrong thing into the wrong thing somewhere in Geneva, and the entire parsec will go out of existence. Not just the Earth or the solar system, the entire parsec will just blink out of existence. It'll just become dark matter faster than you can say, shit. Yeah, then you get to rest. And that rest, you know, if you're listening to some enlightenment salesperson, that rest is this. Here it is. Yeah, that rest is here. Yeah, the dark, you're made more of dark matter than you are of, you know, observable photonic impulse. And that dark matter, you know, poetically or metaphorically, is absolute rest. But so is the background field or the rudimentary miracle of your present experience is also that rest. That's why, you know, shit like enlightenment and zendos exist. Because they're a reflection of the observation of total rest in the midst of brouhaha. So our identity... pride goes into the creature that is enjoying or suffering from one or a million forms of brouhaha. And so we're just encased, ensconced, like in a cocoon of fantasy. But that miracle is occurring in or adjacent to, you can't really speak of it in terms of volume, absolute rest. And if there is a fork in the road, Yogi Berra would say, take it. You know. Or pull it out of the pavement, kind of like King Arthur. That's what we're playing with. Here's this. Nothing happened to you a moment before now. Just for fun, not that anything's true, I can't emphasize it enough. Nothing happened to you a moment before this one. All you are, all you have, is this palpable, radiant presence of the full field of imagination and experiencing. Placebo. Plethora of placebo. And in this plethora of placebo, you can say something happened to me a minute ago. But it sure as shit didn't. Because if you look really carefully to what is occurring now, how about now? When does now actually arrive long enough to hitch it to the post outside the saloon? You may as well just keep drinking. There is no now, though there's nothing but now. There is no here, but there's nothing but here.
There's no you, but there's nothing but you.
Wow, yep. Nowhere is now here. Down here in the Inferno.
If he invited us, what does that make him?
Really?
That part's not a surprise. That part we knew.
Lucifer, bearer of light.
Yeah, right. We bring to each other's attention that consciousness is apparitionally appearing. And you're not that. And that was the shockwave that Nirsagadatta put forth in a post-Krishnamurti universe. That entered the, call it the Western popular lexicon of non-dual possibility. I mean, it's been there for countless thousands of years, but, you know, it refreshes kind of from generation to generation. Some crazy gesticulating wild man, you know, who died of throat cancer because of, you know, beady abuse, basically spoke the truth in a vernacular that was post Krishnamurti. And Krishnamurti spoke the truth in a vernacular that was like post Vedantin. And that, if you were paying attention, if you know, you were sniffing this shit out since you were 12 years old, you go, whoa, whoa, whoa. Because when Nirsagadatta showed up on the scene, he put Krishnamurti to rest. Depending on how you were paying attention, right?
Is everyone good right now? Need any more coffee, drinks? Is there good water in the container still? Do you want me to refill it?
I think we're good. Does anyone else want more water? I think we're good. Yeah, there should be enough.
What did you say Nirsagadatta's message was?
Well, of many, many books that were written, more or less transcriptions of, you know, talks. Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't write, you know, everything was a transcription of him dealing with aspirants, mm-hmm, right? But the most popular of the whole bunch of them is, you know, I am that. right? It's kind of like a, you know, the non-dual Bible. But you see, Krishnamurti, when you'd hear him speak, when you, you know, watch him deliver this profound nuance of absolute freedom, he would kind of do so using human behavior as the handle. Krishnamurti would pull on, pluck, point, ping human behavior, the geometry of human psychiatric, you know, systems, to point out that we aspire for nonviolence, but we're violent. We do this, but we're that, right? So he would emphasize the inescapable sheepishness of human behavior systems to transmute into the ineffable. And Nirsagadatta was like, zippity-doo-dah, I don't give a flying F on who you think you are, on your I mean, he just did not deal with the psychiatry of the human race like Krishnamurti did to encourage, you know, a transcendent event. He just went, hey, look, consciousness, you got to be, consciousness, food body. I mean, he reduced everything that Krishnamurti made into a very eloquent, right, espousal. Food body. I am not that.
That's it. I'm going for the coconut brownie.
Okay.
Yeah, like you need your imagination to feed, like it's a far movie.
But, you know, many people, you know, the innocent people that went to see Nirsagadatta out of love and curiosity and, you know, genuine cathartic interest, I mean, you know, we have no idea how many of them awoke, either through his company or through, you know, one or several of his students, Jean Dunn, Ramesh Balsekar, you know, Wayne Lickerman is a third generation, right, downstream of Nirsagadatta because his guru was Ramesh. Blah, 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 blah. There was not a lot of, you could say, demonstrably awakened personalities that came out of the Krishnamurti era. Vimala Thakkar was one.
Who's that?
She's gone. She was great. She was a fireball. She stood about this tall.
Yeah. Short people are the best.
But, you know, but the wonder of, call it the spiritual culture, anecdotal spiritual culture, depending on, you know, how you want to follow it, is fascinating. You could look at the ways that, you know, Buddhism and Hinduism and Western occultism, et cetera, have interwoven and created institutions and persons and books and teachings that are, you know, effusive. You don't have enough time in a lifetime to drink it all in.
That's what I'm trying to say. Open that door.
Yeah. But any and all of it are all demonstrative reflections of what? That this is a plethoric placebo. See? Boom. So it's possible, since it's the case, that you can feel this with no authority above or below you, with no God, manifest or unmanifest, above or below you.
That's a destroyer.
It's an invitation.
No wonder they call it sugar.
I call you a two and I raise you one. Wait a minute. Oh, there we go.
A Everything needs a sugar hat, apparently.
One of those days. You withdraw from utility. You withdraw from consequence. You withdraw from genesis, source, explanation. You withdraw from manipulation, from planning.
Preferences.
Preferences.
Agendas.
And yet you make your coffee a certain way. And the gift of you, the non-authoritative, completely transcendent gift of you, is when exactly? How about all the fucking time? You learn to rest in not needing to make any sense of this. No self-referencing. No if-onlys. Or whatabouts. And somehow you just find yourself returning quite naturally with no preparation or effort to the signature of your own being. And it sneaks up on you, catches up with you, solicits you into itself, which is yourself. And the shit that you thought you were, or the life you thought you were condemned to or graced with, is truly of no concern of yours. That's a strange way of living, because usually we're overwhelmed and consumed with this life that we're living and its quality,
and we're in crisis,
and of course that's accompanied by all the vicissitudes of that imagination field. This is Simply Red. Is that the band's name?
Counting Crows.
Hmm?
Who's Counting Crows?
Mm-hmm. Counting Crows.
Simply Red. Who's that?
There was another band with a guy that had a great voice and he had red hair. Counting Crows. Oh, sorry.
Funny how random stuff like sticks in your head. Like one day at breakfast at Andre's, you were like, and there's even Counting Crows. So there's like playing in the background, and, you know, every time I hear Counting Crows, it's like, this is Radiant Bliss, and there's even Counting Crows.
Music has a serendipitous quality.
Yeah.
And would you be ever present, sort of, but timeless, always. Seems to.
Way, way too long.
Music is thrilling because it accentuates non-duality. Vision, of course, accentuates. I mean, everything accentuates non-duality because that's what it is. Attention is experience. and you know yourself without the passage of time. The confidence that you have in being is not the consequence of anything. When you project yourself as a creature, that's the consequence of thinking, of association. But you know yourself as being, not as the consequence of anything. If there's a difference, that's the difference. When we're living in relationship with the reality through belief, then we are the consequence of imagination. Body, mind, and afflictions. But your being is not consequential. And your confidence in it is not the result of anything. Being is self-confident. Non-dually so. No interloper. No intermediary.
No unwanted asshole that needs to be sedated.
Sometimes there is an unwanted asshole that needs to be sedated. I've been that more than on my fair share.
Yeah. That's why I brought it up for myself. It's like this constant, like there's some unwanted asshole in my presence that needs to be sedated.
Yeah. Yes.
She's talking about me. No, I'm talking about myself.
Yeah. We're all guilty.
I think so.
This.
I love this song.
We've been put down and manipulated, you know, for so long as the creature. You know, the media, the school, the parents, the educational systems, the political systems, the consumerist systems, the credit financial systems.
The jobs.
Everything is a total put down of the bliss of you.
Yeah. A negation of it.
That, if you think about that, everything is a total put down of the bliss of you. There's like double, triple, I don't know how many meanings in that statement. You know?
It is interesting to just look and be like, dude, if you wanted the best conspiracy theory ever, the best way to create a slave would be to create imaginary conflict, keep them there, and then they can't experience intimacy. It's on the same, you know. So what they really want is intimacy, but they can't get out of the imaginary conflict, and they run around trying to ameliorate the imaginary conflict via your products, of course. Mm-hmm. And all they really want is intimacy.
The defense industry thrives. It's the great siphoning.
They can't find it anywhere.
Great siphoning, like it's just like unfriendly extraterrestrials landing on the planet, creating false conflict, and siphoning all the resources from the constituency as a result of arming against the false conflict. And this happens in every single industry, including, you know, the NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange.
Yeah, that's funny, because we don't really take it like, you know, it's like anti-war, like the counterculture, you know, all this stuff that some people are like really anti-war, but they can't take it as far as seeing what we're talking about, you know?
No.
But it's the same. What you really don't want is the conflict at all.
The whole fabric.
You want intimacy.
The whole fabric of human culture controlled by those that have whatever degree of control that they have is to assure themselves that you don't find out that you're God.
Yeah, and like somehow, like if it, you can't find the intimacy anywhere, it's like not available. It's not easily, readily, you know, available.
That's why the drugs are illegal.
It doesn't take much. Yeah, little hints of it, and you're like, oh, what was that? That's what I'm looking for, you know. It doesn't take much.
No, it doesn't take much. Yeah. One casual mushroom trip, then you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
But hold on a minute.
Hold on a minute.
And we're so foolish that as much as we love our children, we raise our children to succeed, survive, become as independent as possible within the misogynistic dream.
It's a perpetuating cycle, it seems.
Yeah.
Like that anyway, so.
Misogynistic? Wait a minute.
Misanthropic?
Yeah.
And misanthropic. To me, they're the same.
Yeah, they are. Literally.
Yeah. Yeah. The Divine Mother rules the roost. If you're misogynistic, you're misanthropic.
That's kind of what, you know, that imaginary asshole that's been bred in me that I want to sedate.
Yeah.
Instead of kind of transcending it, I just keep trying to sedate it. You can't sedate it.
I know. I mean, it's a reasonable reply, considering the degree of sorrow and anger that we all suffer from. Sedation is like, thank God.
Yeah, that seems like the ticket out of the park.
Yeah,
it's like, absolutely. It can be used in any, you know, meditating.
Yeah.
I mean, marijuana, but it can go so many different levels. It's like,
yes, yes. And it does. It does. All of those.
Push it somewhere.
Yeah. Because you can see how I don't know if rare is the right word. This is the open doorway, and yet by its own nature easily remains absolutely hidden, even in the midst
everywhere
of all
go.
Of its demonstration.
Yeah.
So it's curious that one finds themselves on a migratory path out of anger and sorrow, which are the consequences of hallucination, to find their way straight through the open portal of reality. And yet, I can put an ad in Creating Community magazine, issue after issue after issue, targeted to an audience that claims to have interests in something or other.
Do you do that?
No one shows.
Has anyone ever come from Creating Community?
I think I did.
Oh, get out, okay.
Yeah. I really can't remember, but I don't know. I might have Google searched like a Sangha or something, but I might have seen the combo, you know.
Maybe you all do that thing they used to do. Sex, now that I have your attention.
But I definitely didn't respond to an ad that said, like, you know, despair and whatever else you put, so the ads change, you know. I might have responded to a very general, like, Sangha invitation.
Your life is strewn about on the floor.
Atrophied at your feet. I definitely didn't respond to that.
That's a little too intimate, isn't it? Hey, that's me.
At the level I was at, looking for, you know, a
that's
Sangha.
That's what I've been hiding from people
with.
All my life. Yeah. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, really. Someone knows that's true? Shit. I'm going to avoid that guy at all costs.
I'd take a hitman out on him.
You know, when Richard Dreyfuss went to the great monolith to meet the extraterrestrials, he was invited. When that ship, you remember early in the film, Close Encounters of a Third Kind, when that ship flew over him and rattled his truck and may have even lifted him up or something weird happened, he was inoculated. And then he was on an absolute ferocious tear to get to some place, but he didn't know why or when or how or what. I mean, he was just driven beyond voluntary compulsion, right? And so he threw all that dirt in his house and was making a giant mound because he had to find the place and find the place. And then when he became absolutely frustrated, he ripped the top off and there was Devil's Tower. And it was on TV, but he was so bereft, he didn't see that Devil's Tower was on TV that some event it had there. And you're like, look at the TV, look at the TV, look at the TV. Because he created Devil's Tower as a dirt bomb in his living room. And there it was on the TV, but he was just, you know, out the window or something. Yeah, he was totally distracted. And then finally he saw it, right? He was like, and he got in the car. I mean, it was, you know, he didn't pack. He just went to Devil's Tower. And they had the canaries, speaking of canaries, you know, that were all dead in the perimeter because the military wanted to make sure that everyone thought it was a, you know, that it was a train wreck. Right? That it was an environmental accident. So don't go anywhere near. So he had to climb through, you know, and get on, and the helicopters, they picked him up, and, you know, the head scientist said, no, he's cool, he was invited. That's this. This is Devil's Tower. You've arrived. You're invited. This wants you to be its bitch. And there's nothing you can do about it. There's nothing to do with me. Fuck.
It's like a cat in heat.
It's a cat in heat. You are a cat in heat. And you're going to growl at this fucker while it takes you down.
Pound in the middle of the night. Can't figure out why.
Yeah, you are fulfilling an appointment that you don't even recall making. That's that.
I don't want to interrupt. Anybody need anything?
We'll take the check.
Are you ready for it? Sure.
What do you suppose would happen if one took the rebellious track?
The rebellious track.
Which is, I'm invited, I ain't fucking coming.
Yeah, no, it'll drag you screaming. It's kind of like when a poltergeist grabs you by the feet and sucks you into the basement. you can protest all you want. Doesn't matter. It loves a good fight. Mm. I mean, what's the most fun that a black hole has? Watching everybody scream on the way in. I mean, when they, as an astrophysicist, say, "Oh, there's a black hole over there." Excuse me, how do you know that? I mean, it doesn't emit anything, dude. It's a singularity, dude. No. As shit pours in, it screams. And it screams in X-rays. So the perimeter of the black hole, or the event horizon of the black hole, is witnessed by virtue of the screaming X-rays. Because the black hole doesn't emit light. It doesn't emit anything. It's a singularity of just, you know, total engulfment, like we are. But the black hole, the most fun the black hole has is watching everybody scream on the way into the pool. So if you're defiant, it's like, good show, keep up. It's going to suck you into oblivion no matter what. But, you know, if you're putting on a good sparkle act, it's like, bravo. Black holes are not that happy with clowns like Ramana Maharshi. There was no fight.
Even exist. It's like,
I mean, you know, 14 years old, you know, 13, 14, 15, God knows what, lying down going, oh, I've died, oh, I'm awake, oh, I'm going to go sit on a mountain. Black holes like, loser, loser. I mean, we get all excited because it sounds like remarkable, you know, from a human point of view, but from the point of view of reality, Ramana Maharshi is a total wipeout. Useless. But you, on the other hand, you're a good show. that in there?
She did.